You are listening to the audio-only portion of the KoopaCast. To watch the video version, please check out purenintendo.com/KoopaCast. The intro and outro music of our KoopaCast is brought to you by the artist Big Giant Circles, who has composed for projects such as Mass Effect 2, Super Street Fighter 2 HD Remix, and Borderlands 2. Our opening song is Houston, and our closing song is A Rose in the Field, both from the album Glory Days. To listen to more of Big Giant Circles' work, go to music.biggiantcircles.com to see his entire collection of video game remixes and soundtracks. You can also find his collection on iTunes. Again, that website is music.biggiantcircles.com.
Microphone every once in a while. Holy crap, we're already online.
Hey.
That was way faster than it should be.
Too fast, Steven.
Too fast for me. Anyway, welcome to everybody to a yet another KoopaCast. We're on episode 74.
Nice.
This is the week of August 12th, 2015. I'm your host, as always, Matt, the multimedia manager of PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. I am joined by two other people. I'm joined by Alex Schramke.
Who just put on my lower third. Oh, yeah. What's up, everybody?
And Justin Sharp.
Hey, everyone.
And we're going to start out with a very, very, very special announcement. Very long time coming, I think.
Yes.
People have written to us before and asked us, you know, when are we going to have KoopaCast on iTunes? When are you going to have the KoopaCast on iTunes? Well, guess what? The KoopaCast is now officially on iTunes. So, if you're on your mobile device and you have the Apple Podcast app, just search KoopaCast under Podcast to find us. All 75 episodes of our KoopaCast are on there.
So, awesome.
If you've never checked it out, you know, you have a great library to catch up on.
Yeah, do some exercise, listen to it. There you go. Increase your well-being.
Exactly. And for those of you wondering how future updates are going to work with the KoopaCast, every future KoopaCast will release the day after at noon EST. So tonight's KoopaCast is on August 12th. So the audio version of our KoopaCast will go out August 13th at noon. All right, we will have a post about it on our website. And that will be coming up in about 8 minutes. So if you want to see more details, you can check it out there. Another thing you may have noticed when you opened up our KoopaCast episode and started it up, you realized that you were greeted by my voice, of course, because I have to be on every KoopaCast now, some form or another. I have to tell you guys that not only is it an audio-only podcast, but we also have an intro and outro song. So a very special thanks to Big Giant Circles for letting us use their music. The opening song is Houston, and the closing song is A Rose in the Field. And they're both from the album Glory Days. If you want to check out more Big Giant Circles music, you can always go to music.biggiantcircles.com, or you can check out his albums on iTunes. If you guys are wondering who Big Giant Circles is, it is a composer and chiptune artist, and they've also created music for such titles as Mass Effect 2 and Borderlands 2. So again, once again, thank you very much to Big Giant Circles for letting us use music for the intro and outro.
Gonna have to give that a listen now. You got me all excited.
It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad we got that going.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And without further ado, let's begin the episode. So let's talk about Gamescom. Who here paid attention to what Nintendo did on Gamescom?
A little bit, yeah.
Did Nintendo do anything significant at Gamescom?
Besides in tournaments, not really. Most of the same stuff from E3.
Yeah.
All right, is that a big deal to you all?
Nah. Well, the tournaments were pretty cool. They did a Mario Kart 8 one, and the winner got like this really awesome like life-size Leaf trophy. It was all golden and awesome looking.
Nice.
So that would have been cool to try to compete for.
All they needed to do is sell them. I mean, outside of Europe, I believe they are selling them in Europe, right?
I think so. I don't know if they're that big.
Yeah, they're miniature ones for the Club Nintendo. This was like a life-size trophy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
I'd be fine with either, really.
Yeah.
We should see if we can get one for the for us and then just pass it around to whatever tournament we come up with.
There you go.
That would be awesome.
So, does anybody think it's a big deal that Nintendo did not do much at Gamescom 2015?
I mean, it'd be cool, always cool if they did more, you know? I mean, who doesn't want to hear more Nintendo announcements that's a Nintendo fan? I mean, we could all stand to have some more info from them, but I guess they're still treating Gamescom a lot like the kind of the smaller shows, like PAX, or, I mean, I wouldn't consider like San Diego Comic-Con a small show, but as far as video games, it's a smaller focus of Comic-Con. Yeah, it just seems like they're, you know, just trying to get their games out there, and I think it's a lot better than what they've done in the past. But I think they could stand to do a little bit more.
If I figured Nintendo's hierarchy of shows, it's like E3,
yeah.
Everything else.
Yeah, and like, it's kind of how they plan their whole year. They plan their year around E3 for the major announcements. And until, like, I mean, I know Gamescom, I think, is, like, the largest gaming expo in the world now.
Yes.
But it's open to the public. So that, I mean, I'm sure if they made E3 open to the public, it would be, you know, rivaling Gamescom, if not more. So,
I mean, with the internet the way it is, that E3 is more or less open to the public already.
Yeah.
Because everyone's live streaming the shows, like Nintendo even live streamed their stuff, Nintendo Treehouse, you know, Microsoft's live streaming their stuff, Sony's live streaming their stuff. So we're getting already all so many things, and that's we're not even including like the other journalist sites that are like live broadcasting from there.
Yep.
Now, E3 is essentially already open to the public.
Right. Yeah. Except for hands-on stuff, it's out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think you know, Nintendo should probably treat that with a little bit. With like E3 and Gamescom, like more on a level field, even though there's one right after the other.
Yeah, they're really close to each other. I mean, E3 is what, mid June? I mean, it's been what, barely 2 months since E3, I think.
Yeah.
But
it seems like it's all part of the Nintendo cycle. They show off all these new games to E3. Everybody hates on them because they're new, weird, and different. And yeah. Then they use all the other conventions to get people to play the games. And they're like, hey, you know, this isn't actually that bad. Then it's all like, oh, we love Nintendo. It's like, look what they're doing. They're innovating their new, you know, their IPs again. It's just one big cycle. It just goes round and round.
It's true. That's a good point, Alex. Yeah. Nintendo, they need to innovate. They need to add new IPs. What's this new Splatoon thing? That's silly. You know?
Exactly.
Motion controls are garbage.
Yeah, exactly. Although, I mean, to its credit, I think Splatoon did have actually a pretty good response from E3 last year.
Yeah, it was like one of the most...
Like people, I think, were...
Sought after games?
Yeah, they were really surprised, but it was a good surprise. It was not a Metroid Blast Ball surprise.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing like Splatoon and when they were talking about it. Uh-huh. I was completely uninterested until they started showing footage.
Yep.
I was like, okay, now you have my attention.
Yeah.
I was like, until then, I was just like, all right, whatever. Just keep going.
Yeah.
This sounds boring.
And the gameplay, man, it's pretty compelling. I mean, I was wondering how well its staying power would be. But, I mean, it's what, been since May?
Yeah.
But almost 4 months, and I think it's probably more popular than even at launch was. So, I mean, they've been doing really good and having all the continuous updates. And then I remember, like, it was maybe the first week or the first couple days I had online connectivity issues, just a couple maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, ever since then, it's just been smooth. Great. And
to just one quick statement before we get off into a tangent, which we're doing right now because we're talking about
Splatoon,
is I kind of wonder how long Nintendo could possibly keep up their updates with Splatoon. Because it's just been, like, you know, shotgun blast after shotgun blast of just updates and stuff, like, every other week. And it's awesome that they're still supporting it, but it's like they're going rather fast with this. Like, you know, if they don't slow down, we're not going to have anything left.
Mm-hmm. I would really like to see, I mean, one big major update I would like to see is co-op, where two people on the same system can play online together.
Right.
That's my biggest gripe with it right now, is it's really a single-player experience. I mean, when you're showing people, like, people are coming over, hey, check out this new game. Oh, we can't play, or only one person can play at a time, you know, or, I mean, because really I don't even play that co-op balloon game.
It's awful.
Yeah, so, I mean, really the game is a single-player experience in my book, so it'd be nice if they did that.
I completely agree with that. Anyway, back to Gamescom.
Yes.
It seems Nintendo did win a couple awards. Let me pull them up real quick. Mm-hmm. I should say a few awards. One of them was, of course, it's a gimme. It's the best console game on the Nintendo. And it says Nintendo Wii, but the other two categories are best console game, Microsoft Xbox, best console game, Sony PlayStation. So in that vein, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
And so Mario Maker won that one.
Awesome.
That's worthwhile.
Best mobile game, which includes handheld, iOS, Android, and Windows, went to Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes.
Nice.
Interesting.
And I thought there was one more. Ah, here we go. Best social / casual / online game was Super Mario Maker. Mm-hmm. And so,
interesting category to rope it into.
Yeah. The next category after that is best online multiplayer game. Hmm. And that went to Star Wars Battlefront.
Hmm. Yeah. So interesting.
I'm glad to see Mario Maker get some love. I mean, it definitely impressed me more at E3 than I was expecting. You know, like when you first go to their booth, I mean, it was a huge focus of their booth, and I was like, I don't think it. You know, I wasn't expecting to be that big of a game, or hoping it wasn't that big of a focus, but. They had a huge focus, and it turns out to be a great game. So
I'm pretty excited for it. I want to try it out so badly because from what I've been able to see from like videos they've shown off, it looks like you're able to do some pretty complex stuff with such a simple editor. It's basically a drag and drop interface is what it looks like, you know, on a grid system.
Yeah, it's pretty much just the Smash Brothers stage fix from Brawl.
Mm-hmm.
But just convert it over to like a Super Mario style.
Yeah, I would say it's a lot more than that because I mean even the.
I'm making it a very generalized statement, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is like that's what the stage creator was the grid in Brawl, which was a grid,
right?
Which you could put blocks and stuff like that around. That's what I'm thinking of, and then I see that, and like that's like the next progression, the next step
mm-hmm.
of like
mm-hmm.
creating your own stuff.
Yeah. It's just an exciting concept to think of like virtually unlimited Mario levels.
Yeah.
In like any of the popular styles of Mario you want. Like I'll probably be making them in like the Super Nintendo style because that's my favorite Mario. So.
Yeah, that or Mario 3.
Yeah. Same here. I'll probably gravitate more towards those.
Yeah, not Super Mario Brothers Wii.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I didn't really get confirmation on this, but I know you can make a level in a certain style, but can people play it in any other style?
I don't know. I think when you save it online, it's just that style.
Okay, because and they mentioned like in the overview trailer today how you can download someone else's and tweak it. So maybe they set it up in Super Mario style or Super Mario World, and then you download it and tweak it to Mario Brothers 3 if you wanted and add some other elements. But it seems like they were trying to make things interchangeable enough to where you could completely swap the styles. It's like Bowser, is like you've got NES Bowser, original Mario, Mario Bros. 3, Mario World, and then Wii. So I'm hoping they do something like that because it'd be cool just to like experience the level just in the different styles, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing you'd have to watch out for was switching it between like 3 and Wii is because Wii has the wall jump now.
That's right. And did they cross? Did they backport that or?
No.
I heard something that they were saying that the physics remain intact between all of them. So Mario will jump differently between the original Mario Brothers 3 World and Wii.
That'll be interesting.
Well, but then I saw another thing, like a video that showed, you know how it shows like Mario's ghost image when he's jumping?
Yeah.
They did like an overlay of Wii versus original Mario Brothers, and it was the same. So I don't know. We'll see what it is. I like that they at least have the sound effects completely different. You know, when you switch the styles, and that's awesome. But I could see myself spending a lot of time with the game.
I figured they wouldn't because they said physics, but they didn't say abilities. Also, I mean, I guess they could get away with not having it, but there would be no. They would have to create a sprite animation for Mario hugging the wall.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know how well that would work. And maybe that's the reason why you couldn't necessarily play every single level in every style, you know? So, like, if they made it for wall jumping, you know, heavily throughout the level in the Wii mode, you know, it obviously wouldn't backport to the original Mario Brothers, so. Or maybe in that case, you just include one of, you know, Bowser's little ships or something. His little clown car. Yeah, his little clown car cup thing.
Wouldn't it be like a clown copter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think they always called it like a clown car. But yeah, it was like a little copter thing that he rode in.
Yeah, his little
details.
Sounds like we need to look this up right now.
I think it's Angry Teacup Copter.
Let's see. I'm going to look this up right now. Anybody else want to talk about Gamescom some more? Like anything?
You know, Nintendo used to do some stuff at, what was it? They used to call it Leipzig, or maybe it was Leipzig Gamescom or Leipzig GC or something like that. But remember, they actually announced Nintendo Wi-Fi connection at that event way back when. So they used to have like more of a presence where they would announce stuff there at the European show. But I don't know, since then, I guess they're just trying to get the games out and just focus on E3. But I think that's kind of Nintendo's focus anyway. They've kind of been with the Nintendo Direct ever since they've started doing that. E3 has really been their main announcement platform for a show.
All right. I went to Mario Wiki, and it says the Koopa Clown Car. And then it says, sometimes called the Koopa Clown Copter. But then it says, citation needed. So somebody needs to get on that and prove me right.
you could prove yourself right. Go on, man.
He's got a Super Mario World manual on him.
Yeah, I just got to breeze through every Super Mario game. I can find that manual, no problem.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Now we got if you got the Virtual Console release, you'll have the
manual. The full scanned manual now.
How nifty is that, man?
Very nifty. It's pretty cool. Like, I got Mario 64 on there, and it was cool reliving the manual on there because I think mine got destroyed or something.
That needs to be like a revival of the manual. I'm fine with having a digital manual, but they should totally go back to adding like the awesome artwork and stuff.
Yeah, it should be kind of like a mini magazine type of thing. Because they're kind of soulless, the digital manuals that they have on the Wii U, where it's
all like bare bones stuff. It's like starting the game.
Yeah.
Technical info.
Yeah, and you got like maybe pictures or something, or like a controller layout. But where's the heart?
Where's the love, you know?
I got a nice thick manual from the Wii era right here.
There you go.
But
but that's like with different languages put in too, I'm sure.
Yeah,
like a quarter of that's in English. And
Let's see if you're right.
Oh, yeah, he's right. That was good.
I knew my manuals.
All of the Wii manuals were like that.
He's wrong.
I'm wrong. Impossible. Inconceivable.
All right, and here's the game that the manual came from.
Metro Prime Trilogy.
Bingo.
Da-da-da-da.
That one did have a pretty verbose one.
I have to say, that is a very brilliant segue, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
I saw it, and I had to take it. I was like, Can't miss it. So, Metroid's 29.
Man.
We should celebrate by playing some Blast Ball.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it'll come out in time for our 30th anniversary. Perfect timing.
That's our 30th anniversary special is Blast Ball, a game that does not feature Samus.
Yes. Well, you know, it's kind of terrible and ironic. When you mentioned the 29th anniversary, I was like, oh, man, they should come out with a game next year. I was like, oh, they are.
Yes.
They should come out with a real game next year.
Yeah, a real Metroid game.
Oh, man.
They get a lot of flack for Federation Force, but I have good faith that it'll turn out pretty well, but it's definitely not what people want.
not at all. No. I'll give it the benefit of the doubt, but
yeah.
I don't think so. I mean,
Blast Ball, I think we can say, is going to be pretty terrible. I mean, like Rocket League is kind of becoming really popular. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah.
So if it could like capture some sort of essence of Rocket League, I could see, you know, it get some sort of popularity. But as it is, it's even more boring than soccer. And that's
because it's like a 3-on-3 soccer, right?
Yes. Yeah. And like the arena is fairly small. I mean, 3-on-3. I mean, it's fairly claustrophobic for a soccer field.
Very true.
Well, we can all just hold on to the hope that this could be like a giant, elaborate prank.
Yeah.
Like, that there's actually like a really awesome Metroid game that they've been keeping secret. It's like, oh, just kidding. You know, this is just some silly minigame.
Yeah.
Retro is the real game.
It looks amazing.
Speaking of awesome Metroid games, let's talk about some.
Yes.
So I've been posting on Twitter at Pure, using the our Twitter handle at Pure Nintendo, and I asked our audience what their favorite Metroid memories are. And while those are coming in, I'd like to ask you guys what your favorite Metroid memories are.
Ooh. Well,
I'll let you go first, Justin.
my favorite Metroid memory, I guess it would have to be playing Metroid Prime. I mean, like, I like all the Metroid games, but I don't know. There's something about Metroid Prime that it was just so immersive. I mean, when you guys think about it, we didn't have a Metroid on the 64. So Metroid Prime, it was the first Metroid game in 3D. And, man, it was such a just a big immersive jump from where the games used to be, you know? And I just remember, like, when you first land on the planet after being up on the space station, and just like looking up at the sky and just seeing like the water droplets hit her visor. And I mean, just the subtle details of the fog, fogging up the mask and seeing her reflection and, you know, certain explosions you'd see, you know, her eye or her part of her face, you know. I mean, that sort of stuff was, yeah, epic. But
it seems silly now, but like the fact that like there'd be like a horde of like little aliens coming, crawling across the wall and you'd blast them and get the slime in your visor. And you're just like, oh, man, this is awesome.
Yeah. You just felt like you're in this grimy, gritty space adventure, you know? And like, you felt like cold. Like, when you were in the space station, it felt cold and sterile and, you know? And it felt, like, humid and dense when you're in the jungles. Like, I mean, the level design in that game I thought was really good. I mean, it had some backtracking, sure, but... I thought they did an awesome job of it.
The opening stage on the space station was definitely one of my favorite, like, first stages in a game.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, you go in there, and then, like, everything's, like, torn up, and, like, you just see these space pirate bodies just littering the area, and, like, some of them are in half, and you see, like, bugs eating them.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing, like, the mutated, like, stuff start going around, and you start hearing about Phazon a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was, like, a really just good opening.
Yeah. And yeah, like have it the scan visor, I mean, that kind of added, you know, a whole other level of depth. I mean, you could
That's my favorite all, part of the game.
Yeah, you're gathering all this information. I never felt like it was forced on me, you know, like some games, in order to give you a lot of context when you start the game, they've got like all these like speech bubbles, right? But I felt like the fact that you could choose to learn more about the surroundings and what's happening on the space station just made it that much better.
Yeah, but one of the worst things about that scan visor was that in order to 100% that game, you had to scan everything.
Yeah.
If you didn't scan every little thing, the opportunity it came up, you don't get 100%, and you don't get that little extra ending about Metroid Prime resurrecting as Dark Samus.
Yeah, yeah, and that was the most frustrating aspect, because like you get into a boss fight, what's the first thing you think of? Scanning the boss. Sure, you know, it's like,
yeah, you know.
I mean, they taught you that for the first one.
Yeah.
But then, like, I think I did it for most of them, or I think there was one boss I might have missed.
Yeah. And then when you miss one and you're, like, three-fourths of the way through the game, you're like, we'll just have to go back. Or...
Right. Or just some no-name enemy you'd never see again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It's a tough life as a bounty hunter, you know? You gotta learn about your surroundings in order to conquer it.
And I was too young. I was not really following the stuff back then as like I do now. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember, but I guess there was like a backlash for when people found out that Metroid Prime was going to be in first person.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember when they first showed off that trailer at Space World, and they showed like Samus, she was running, and there were a bunch of those little crawly, bug-looking things, you know, around her. And then like she moved her arm towards the screen and shot at it. And so you only saw like 5 or 10 seconds. It didn't show actual gameplay. So maybe people were thinking it was a third-person game or something.
I remember a lot of people were calling it a first-person shooter. Huh. And like Miyamoto was getting frustrated with that. He's like, don't think of it as a first-person shooter. It's more of like a first-person exploration game.
Yeah.
And it was just so difficult for people to wrap their minds around it, just seeing the footage.
Yeah. And it really was like a very different game than most first-person games at that time. I mean, most first-person games were, yeah, first-person shooters. Or, I mean, was any of the Elder Scrolls games out where you had, you know, like your sword and your hand? And you,
oh, yeah. Elder Scrolls has been around for a while. Morrowind.
Yeah, Morrowind was, did it have that perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I spent way too much time on Morrowind. It's my favorite.
My friends had that. That looked like the most boring game on the planet to me. I was like, I could not fall asleep faster after watching all of that brown.
Yeah.
They're like, no, it's great. See, look at all the things I collected and put in my house.
You have to dive in for yourself to understand.
Not a chance.
So when did that game come out? Is that 90s or early 2000s?
It's probably early 2000s, I want to say.
Metroid
Prime, I have like the PC collection somewhere, but I don't feel like hunting it down.
Well, Metroid Prime was 2002, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I mean,
it was probably around that time.
Yeah, for what they did, I mean, the level of immersion and it really, I mean, it is a shooter, I guess, but I mean, that's kind of just a piece of the gameplay.
That's not the focus of it. Is they took the concept and the feeling of exploring and feeling alone. They just took that from 2D and then took it to a whole nother level of 3D.
Yeah, like it's seriously one of the best. I don't think Nintendo could have done. Some people may argue that Nintendo hasn't done a good job going from standard def to high def, and I would agree in some cases. But man, when Nintendo went from their 2D games to 3D games, I mean, Mario, Ocarina of Time, Metroid, I mean, I thought they did an awesome job with all of the franchises going into 3D.
I never heard that thing about Nintendo not doing well about going to high def. Is it just because it took too long to get to it?
Well, I think that's part of it, but like when Mario Brothers Wii U, New Super Mario Brothers U came out, they were criticized because, I mean, really, Mario Brothers Wii had come out not that long before, and it was essentially just like an HD skin, and even Nintendo themselves said that they underestimated, you know, HD development cycles, that it's taken a lot more to develop these high-def assets or textures or, you know, whatever else. But I don't think there was quite the jump between standard def and high def that people were wanting from Nintendo. But, I mean, Pikmin 3 was awesome. I think that was a really good example of taking that series forward. And I think HD moves that series forward. But.
Yeah, because I was going to say, it's like Pikmin looked great. Wind Waker HD looked really good.
Yep.
Like, that looks way better than the GameCube one. The GameCube one was aging great, but now it just looks like garbage compared to the HD one.
Yeah. I guess most of the criticism that I've heard would probably be centered on just the fact that it's late to the party, you know? Okay. It looks great, but, you know, people are like, oh, we've had a bunch of other HD games that look as good, if not better, well before. So there was nothing new, whereas Nintendo and 3D gaming, I mean, the 64 was fairly cutting edge at the time. I mean, PlayStation 1 had, you know, 3D. Atari Jaguar had a tiny bit of 3D capabilities, but not nearly as good as the 64s. But it's kind of leading with those first 3D games, you know, 3D platform with Mario and Zelda.
I'll tell you what, man. Mario 64 blew my mind. I know it's going off on the tangent. When I first saw that game, I think my friend and I probably spent like an hour outside the castle just using the up C button to look around.
Oh, yeah.
So we can see like Mario can. This is so awesome.
Yeah.
You know what Nintendo game doesn't look good on an HD screen? Huh. Skyward Sword.
Oh.
Shots fired. If only it was the first shots. No.
Yeah, I was going to say, if only I had a podcast to talk about how much I don't like Skyward Sword.
You can find it. What episode number is it?
I believe it's episode 73.
73? Is that the last one?
Yeah, it was exactly the last episode.
I've tried to block it out of my mind.
There was also another episode where I talked about Skyward Sword being bad, too. It was another in my defense.
Hmm. We'll have to do some more of those throwdowns where we have to defend our titles. Those are always fun.
Throw down the gauntlet or the power glove.
Moving swiftly on.
Back to Metroid.
Yes, Metroid. Oh my goodness.
See, I played Metroid Prime. That was my first Metroid game. And it's still really good, but I still think Super Metroid might be a little bit better.
Yeah.
That's the fan favorite, though, because it's so perfect and flawless.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good game. So why shouldn't I pick a really good game to be one of my favorite Metroid games?
Mm-hmm.
That's just too perfect, man.
It's too perfect.
There's no quirks. There's no charm. It's just flawless.
It's all charm. It was one of the first NES games that had voice acting.
That's true.
Yeah. It had more voice acting than any of the Metroid Primes. Well, I guess the third one. Did the third one have voice acting?
I couldn't tell you.
Trying to remember.
Oh, man. I just remember, like, all, like, the bosses and that, and, like, anything you had to attack, they had the most, like, painful-sounding, like, little, like, cries whenever you would shoot them. It made me feel bad. It was a little too realistic for me back then.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever played,
Holy crap, like, this game rated again? I think I have a bad connection here.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Matt.
Sometimes my internet gets a little wonky. Sorry about that.
That's right.
It's okay.
You're back.
But, sorry. Well, before I was cut off by my own internet, disintegrating pirates with the plasma beam.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some really awesome effects with, just in all the Metroid games. You know, with the different types of weapons, freezing enemies, and all sorts of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever played the Game Boy One Metroid 2 Return of Samus?
I haven't got.
I got it on Virtual Console on the 3DS, but haven't finished it.
Yeah, I've been playing it on Virtual Console. Maybe it's just because I'm a fan of the Game Boy, but I'm like really getting into that one. It's a lot of fun, and I like the fact that there's like such like a straight objective. It's like you're just there to exterminate like everything, and there's like a little counter to tell you how many of those Metroids you have to exterminate. It's just there's something about that that's like brutal.
Cleansing the station.
It's also one of those games where like you have to remember all like these complex button presses to get to all like the moves because they have like limited buttons to work with.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they only had A and B, right?
Yep, A and B and the D-pad.
Yeah.
But if anybody likes their Game Boy games and they haven't played it before, I'd recommend it. It's actually a really fun game.
So what do you think about Metroid Fusion then?
I enjoyed Metroid Fusion as well. I haven't beaten it, but that was probably the first 2D Metroid game that I got really far into and really heavily invested in. Okay. Mostly because I like the fact that they held your hand a little bit more to tell you where to go. And to me, that was always my problem with some of the earlier Metroid games, is I need a little bit of guidance or I'm just going to go around in circles endlessly. So I was able to follow through with Metroid Fusion a little more.
I got you.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I really got hooked on Fusion. Like, I kept playing it like it was a good book. I just couldn't put it down and end up blowing through it in a few hours. But
The cutscenes, like the cinematics, like for like a handheld, are still really engaging and really intense.
Yeah, and I remember on the Game Boy Advance, I mean, that was pretty compelling of an experience at that time. So, I like Fusion a lot.
I agree about the handholding, or I agree that there was handholding, but I think that's what made me like it less.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you have to go to this area, now you have to go to this area. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand it's all due to the limitations of the Game Boy Advance. Like, it couldn't make a giant experience, say, from what Super Metroid could be.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, so I'll give it that. I'll give it that, I'll acknowledge that was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for what it was pretty good. It was definitely hard, though. I remember that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it had some good challenge, too.
And it was opposite, power in terms of, the missiles to the power beam. Because, in Super Metroid, you just unload missiles. That's how you beat bosses. You just throw missiles at them until they go down.
No.
But, with Fusion, missiles don't do anything, and you have to use your power beam for, a lot of, big bosses.
Yeah. It kind of made them a little more technical in that regard, using your power beam, being able to charge up while you're dodging, or, it made it a little more challenging or daunting in that regard, rather than just spamming missiles, but...
I'd agree. That gravity beast, I don't know if you remember that gross machine thing.
I don't think I got that far, but that sounds pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's that thing where, you remember, Justin, where, if you shot it, its face blew off and it was, melting?
Oh, yeah, it's a screw thing. They had it in Fusion and they had it in, was it another room?
I don't know, I didn't play that.
No, they patted in
It must not be mentioned.
You know what I'm talking about, Alex. He's got this square face. He looks like a Thomas the Train on the front of him, but then he has he has these crazy arms. Let's figure out.
And this is a Metroid bus?
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not Andross?
I don't know. Let me find him. Yeah, there he is. I just found a picture of him. We'll put it in the...
We don't have a talk box.
Oh. We will just talk about it. His name is... Oh, he's the Nightmare Boss.
The Nightmare Boss?
Yeah, his name is Nightmare, I guess.
Was that his name in Fusion?
Yeah, Fusion. Mm-hmm.
So he came back?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm investigating this now. I didn't get that far, but that is really, disturbing looking.
Yeah, isn't he creepy? But they had him in a 3D one. It was Other M, the Nightmare.
Yeah, that's why I remember that guy.
Yeah, Other M.
It's this mechanical beast. It almost looks like a round face and like a TV. And he's got this really creepy frown that looks kind of stitched up.
Yeah, it almost looks like baseball stitching or what's the guy on Nightmare Before Christmas, the main guy? Looks like a face kind of.
Jack Skellington.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, that's way better than what I was going to say. I was going to say Jack Sparrow.
Oh.
Captain Jack Sparrow. Sorry, we'll not say that. But. Yeah, he was pretty messed up and messed up looking at Other M. He had the six eyes and this green...
Mm-hmm.
Did Samus tell you how messed up looking he was?
Probably. She probably went on. Like, yeah.
I looked at the beast. It was definitely very scary. I was kind of shaking. I looked to my right, and there was another wall there. And then I looked back at the monster. That baby Metroid died, and I'm sad.
Yeah, by this time, I'm already dead because I've been talking the whole time.
Oh, God. Did anybody play through all of Other M?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so tell me about your experience.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. it's definitely wasn't the same as the Prime games, but I did like some of the aspects of, you know, switching perspectives. I thought it did a good job with the gameplay, to be honest. But it really was like the dialogue, the overemphasis on that, you know, like the cutscenes, all this stuff. I mean, if you're gonna put cutscenes in there, have some more action or something. But I don't know, they tried to make this big emotional story and develop Samus as a character, but I felt like it did more to destroy her as a character. But
you know, Samus actually has to read her stuff with emotion for that to happen.
Yeah, I know. Like, and I felt like, I'm a big fan of, you know, like Batman the Animated Series, or you know, a lot of animated shows. And you guys probably know Andrea Romano. She's like the voice director for pretty much all of the good stuff out there. So I mean, she's worked on Batman, Superman, all of the animated stuff. I mean, you can look up Andrea Romano. She's worked on like hundreds of animated stuff. But she's a voice director, so that means you've got someone in the booth with you describing, you know, the emotions that your character is going through. Like, she's looking at the, you know, the sketches or the storyboards or the animatics that they've drawn up, and she's like, okay, you just got thrown off a building, your, you know, sister just died, whatever. And I felt like her lines and Samus's lines in Other M were just, oh, so canned. But...
And they just kept describing what was happening.
Yeah, it's like I don't need the dialogue, the monologue going here. Yeah. I can see what's happening.
Like, I think that in that game they kind of forgot that like Metroid as a series is all about like really subtle things that build up to the emotions. You don't necessarily have to spell it out, but just the little things in the environment and the situations are in kind of tell that story for you.
Yeah.
I think they got lost along the way and they forgot that when they made that game.
Like, look what Prime did. Prime did that so well.
Oh, yeah.
They told the story so well.
Yeah.
Like, you just went in there, and if you want to know more about the story, you scan stuff. You scan the artifacts. Yeah. You learn that the Chozo were going crazy. You learn they had to contain the Phazon. You learned about the pirates' research.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just that's good storytelling.
Just like Wood.
Yeah. Feel like,
I don't know. It's just, it's subtlety is probably like the strongest, most powerful way of telling a story, I think.
Yeah, you're not freaking out because Ridley came back for the 18th time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back to what I was mentioning about you know, not having a bunch of like text bubbles when you start a game. You know, it's like, hey, you could tell me everything about the story, you know, in probably 3 minutes of all these scrolling text bubbles, but if I can scan things and figure it out for myself, I'll probably be that more... interested and engaged in it. And I felt like the cutscenes were basically speech bubbles. You know, it's stuff that's interrupting my experience of the game, you know, that I'm going through. But anyways,
To be fair, it's a challenging thing to do because you have to design a game that tells a story, not only in that great detail, but you also have to take into account for the people that don't want to scan things. And they still have to be able to follow along with at least the bare bones of the story. So it's not an easy thing to do, but
yeah,
they definitely should have taken some pages from the Prime series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people are different. You know, like some people watch movies where they're just like completely enamored with everything that's going on, and they're not, you know, asking more questions or figuring out what's going to happen next. They're just there to, you know.
It's there to pop the popcorn and
yeah, they're figuring it out as the characters figure it out, you know. And I feel like those people maybe had a lot more fun with it. I don't know.
I don't know, because at least in those movies, there's things going on. What was going on in Other M?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if you're along for the ride, like, I don't think along for the ride is okay. go ahead and stop the ride and explain to me why this ride is fun. Okay, start the ride again.
Yeah.
That's more like the ride where, like, the overhead voice that tells you to stay in the seat at all times is constantly telling you these things. It's like, please, you lean right to go for the right turn.
Yeah.
It just kills it for you. There's no fun. There's no suspense.
I don't know. Maybe Samus is actually Fi, and we find out that this whole thing is connected.
That makes sense.
There's an 80% chance that the creature I'm fighting is Ridley.
Your batteries are low.
Yeah.
It was then when I realized that the batteries on the Wiimote was low, and I thought to change them, and then I thought again, and then I continue playing.
And some other voice that comes up, change batteries now.
Yeah. My captain authorized me to change batteries. It reminded me of when the captain authorized me to change batteries 5 years ago.
Yeah. He gave me the thumbs down, which really meant thumbs up, because it was a sign of agreement.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So I think good we all agree that other M is the Skyward Sword of Metroid series.
No, we did not. If you mean best Zelda ever, then yeah, no.
I don't remember you saying that in the last episode. You didn't say it was the best ever.
No, I didn't. No, it's not the best ever. But it's definitely not Metroid Other M in the Zelda series, I don't think. But
no, it can't be that bad. There's nothing that can be that bad, but
yeah, that's like, that's reserved for maybe like CDI Zeldas. I don't know.
Maybe
those
I'll
are you bad. Know,
you know what? Maybe I'll play it other M myself, but somebody else has to buy it. So if you're listening out there on the video or the new audio podcast, and you want to send me a copy of Other M, just contact us, and then we'll send you some, or we'll get that all set up.
Whoa! So you haven't actually beaten Other M.
I haven't even played Other M.
You haven't even played Other M?
Oh, snap.
I said that in the beginning.
No wonder you compared Skyward Sword. That you barely played Skyward Sword.
I played all of Skyward Sword. I played it again, and it's like the biggest slog in the middle part. But, what was I going to say? Anyway, like I said, if you'd like me to play Other M, then you can send me a copy of Other M, and then I'll play it, and then I'll review it.
It's dirt cheap at GameStop, folks. Get on it.
Exactly. That's probably $2 new, $50 used.
I think I paid like $5 for my copy or something.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably have it.
That's probably what it's worth.
Must be downstairs.
I watched other people play Other M, and I was about ready to quit after like the first cutscene.
Yeah, the gameplay is more compelling than it is worth a playthrough for sure.
We should talk about cutscenes and games in another Koopa Cast.
Yeah,
maybe that will be the next one.
That'd be a good one.
Hey, I mean, and you know, Nintendo isn't the worst offender of the cutscenes. I haven't played it, but I heard that was it Metal Gear Solid 4?
Oh yeah, it's got 2-hour cutscene at the end.
Yeah, well, it has like cutscenes throughout that are like non-skippable. They're just like essentially movies, you know, that are.
Oh yeah, this game.
An hour.
Metal Gear is a kind of a different beast altogether.
Oh, it is.
That might be a little unfair.
Yeah. That's true.
You guys can't see this.
You need all that just to figure out what the hell is going on.
It's true.
And even then, you don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah. That's part of the point. That's part of like that.
Yeah.
You guys can't see this on the audio podcast, but I've got a copy of Xenosaga in my hands. Let me tell you about bad cutscenes. I've played 10 hours of this game, and at least 7 of those hours are cutscenes.
Oh, man. So you've been watching the game.
Yeah, I've been watching the game. And it's early, like, PS2, which means it's like the voice acting isn't refined. So, it's very, like, ugh.
Good times.
No. I mean, they're not, like, describing things that are happening around them, but they're just all having dialogue, and nothing's happening.
It's so, like stereotypical, like, anime dialogue?
Yeah, more or less.
I don't know if I could do that, man.
But it's, like... And this is Monolith Soft, by the way. And, like, Xenoblade is, like, one of my top games of all time.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Xenosaga, let's see what that's about. It can't be that bad. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah, Xenoblade, man, that was, yeah, they struck, lightning struck with that one.
Yeah. Speaking of, you Nintendo of America, if you're listening, you better get Xenoblade on our Wii U eShop. I know you guys did it for Europe, Nintendo did it for Europe.
Yeah.
But I want it too. I saw a tweet, and it was like, Xenoblade confirmed for Wii U eShop. It's up right now. I'm like, oh my god, I gotta get to the eShop.
It's like,
look back to the tweet. It says only in Europe.
Yeah.
Denied.
Well, you don't own a copy of it, right?
I essentially did for 6 months because I took it from my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's gonna be huge when that comes out in America. I mean, even Europe, that's big. But I know the supply was really low for Xenoblade here in the States. I mean, it was a GameStop exclusive. I'm sure they only printed maybe 100,000 or something.
Yeah.
And I mean, how much was it to buy like a used copy, like $60 or $80, or maybe
something ridiculous?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's something really crazy. It's basically like Earthbound Super Nintendo level of craziness, you know. So the fact that they're gonna release that, I mean, it may not be as crazy as when Earthbound came out of the Virtual Console, but I think when it comes out, there's gonna be a ton of people going out and getting it.
Yep, that would be me. And you guys won't hear from me for a while.
Yeah.
Hey, how come the CoopaCast episodes aren't up on iTunes?
Yeah. Well, you did hear tomorrow. They are coming out with another Wii game tomorrow.
Oh, are they? Have they
announced?
Pandora's Tower.
Oh, I've already got that game. That was the first game I reviewed.
Yep.
In fact, I have it right here.
You just pull it out. Yes, yes. He's holding up a copy of Pandora's Tower, which is, it is a burnt disc.
That was straight from the desert, Xseed Games. I even have their little note.
We have just copied this from our DVD.
Yeah.
It says, hi, Justin. I hope all is well. It closed as the reviewable ROM for Pandora's Tower for the Wii. We have not yet set a release date, but we're trying to make it end of March or April. Hope you enjoy playing the game. And should you have any questions or require additional materials, please let me or Brian at 1PR Studio know. Sincerely, Jimmy Soga.
Oh.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And we did have questions. The question was, how come we couldn't play this on our Wii?
Yeah, since it was a burnt ROM, it had to be on a dev system. So.
But we didn't know that. And I ended up like putting the homebrew channel on my Wii. So like going through all the files and like breaking the Wii or whatever the heck. And it just still didn't work. And that was before my Guinness records. So I couldn't use the Wii after that. Because they needed non-hacked consoles for it.
Them and their.
It's easy not to unhack it. You may lose some data, but
I don't trust myself. Because I said you have to do it exactly right. I'm like, I don't trust myself because it was trial and error to get that stuff on in the first place.
Yeah, the Nintendo updates will remove it for you.
Yeah.
I don't think he did. I don't think I could get updates after that.
Yeah. I was able to do it, but I forget what I had to do. It wasn't as hard as homebrewing it, for sure. It was easier to unhack it than hack it. But...
To be fair, the homebrew channel had some pretty nice music.
It did.
Yeah.
But now we're getting into that more open area.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we should go ahead and start wrapping it up because it's been almost an hour.
That's crazy. But well, when you're talking about something you love like Metroid
and hacking Wii's,
yeah, Metroid is a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
Or is he?
Yeah.
dun, plot twist.
I think a certain Justin Bailey would know the answer to that. Find out for yourself. You at home? Anyway, with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this CoopaCast. So, I want to thank everyone for listening to our CoopaCast, both here live on YouTube and on our podcasts, on our audio podcast on iTunes.
Yes.
If you'd like to listen to more of the CoopaCast, you can always go to purenintendo.com/podcast. and you can find all of the episodes there. Or you can also go to our YouTube channel and find all of our episodes there. They're uploaded automatically as soon as each broadcast is done. Or you could go to our podcast app, or not our podcast app, sorry. You could go to the podcast app on iTunes and look up KoopaCast. I don't think I plugged that enough.
Do it, folks.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a question or you'd like to contact us, you can always leave a comment on each KoopaCast posting. We always look at our KoopaCast page before we start up every episode. So if you have a comment, well, we will try to read it aloud. Or you can follow us on Twitter. Each of our hashtags are listed below. I'm purely underscore Matt. We also have purely underscore Justin. And Alex, what's yours?
The black sheep. I'm the black sheep. It's just Alex Schramke.
It's just Alex, at Alex Schramke.
Yep. Good luck spelling that last name. It's S-C-H-R-A-M-K-E.
Or you could also go to our main Pure Nintendo handle, at Pure Nintendo, and you could ask us a question there using the hashtag KoopaCast. Or you could email us at podcast@purenintendo.com. Once again, that's podcast@purenintendo.com. All right. And again, like I said, I'd like to thank Alex and Justin for joining me.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
I'd like to thank you all for listening, audience. And I'd like to thank Big Giant Circles for providing our intro and outro music.
You guys are awesome.
All right, so we'll see you all next time on the KoopaCast.
Bye, everyone.
Good night, everybody.